We'll take a break of 10 minutes.
Thank appreciate that. Yes.
The next item is a workshop to scope the 2014 triennial review of the Water Quality Control Board for the North Coast region. And I'll call on Alita Manglestor.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Corbett and the other members of the board. I'm Alita Manglestor. I'm a senior environmental scientist, and I am in charge of your basin planning unit. I'm here today to hold a public scoping meeting for the 2014 triennial review of the basin plan. This is the third and last of three scoping meetings that we've held. The first was in Santa Rosa on April 8th, the second in Redding on April 9th, and today, May 8th, here in Fortuna. We've endeavored to offer a number of opportunities to the public to provide recommendations and input on the question of the state of our basin plan and what revisions to the basin plan we should be considering. And here in Fortuna, in this board meeting, we also have an opportunity to receive recommendations from you, the board. So what I intend to do is give an overview of the basin plan. It's a little bit of a basin plan 101, so I'll go through that reasonably quickly. Overview of the triennial review process, a summary of the 2011 triennial review, which was our last review of the basin plan, and then a discussion of the triennial review process for this year. So the basin plan contains the regulations adopted by the North Coast Regional Water Board to control the discharge of waste and other water quality factors which have the potential to affect the beneficial uses of the waters of the state within the boundaries of the North Coast region. The waters of the state are any surface water or groundwater, including saline waters within the boundaries of the state and the North Coast region. Next slide. The North Coast region is one of nine regions in the state. Our basin plan is made up of six chapters. Chapter one is the introduction. Chapter two contains our beneficial uses. Chapter three describes the water quality objectives that are designed to protect those beneficial uses. Chapter four includes our implementation plans. These are the action plans and policies by which we achieve water quality objectives in the state or in the region. Chapter five includes a discussion of the statewide plans and policies that we implement. And chapter six describes the surveillance and monitoring activities that we engage in. So I'm going to go through each of the chapters reasonably quickly. Chapter one is our introduction, as I said, and it describes some of the authorities that come to us through Port of Cologne and the Federal Clean Water Act. It describes the purpose of the basin plan and its history. And one of the primary things it does is describe our regional setting. It goes hydrologic unit by unit through the region and describes this general characteristics. The main idea as established by the basin plan is to be looking forward to something like a 40 or 50 year horizon for considering the issues that are likely to be coming up in that period that we should now be in the process of developing good policies and regulations for. Chapter two, as I said, is our beneficial uses chapter. And beneficial uses of water are those uses that may be protected against degradation of quality, such as, but not limited to. And then there's a list of uses that are statewide, applied statewide, and they include drinking water, recreation, aesthetic enjoyment, et cetera. In 1972, the State Board adopted this uniform list of beneficial uses. It was applied throughout the state. The list was updated in 1996. But our basin plan contains some beneficial uses that were specifically designed for this region. Some of them have been adopted by other regions now. But those unique uses include wetland habitat, flood peak attenuation, floodwater storage, water quality enhancement, Native American culture, and subsistence fishing. Table 2-1 of that chapter includes the beneficial uses identified for each of the hydrologic units in the region. It was updated in 2005, and then there were editorial revisions made in 2011. One of the key things I wanted to say about that table is that we are obligated to protect existing uses, whether or not they're listed in that table. The table represents our current knowledge of existing uses in the region, but anytime we work on projects wherein we discover or have documentation or observe an existing beneficial use, we're obligated to protect that use, whether or not it's on the table. And another point I wanted to make was that downstream uses need to be protected from upstream discharges and other water quality factors. So if there is a beneficial use designated down low in a watershed that could be affected by discharges up high in the watershed, we apply protections appropriate for that beneficial use to those discharges up higher in the watershed. Chapter 3 is our water quality objectives chapter, and it describes the limits or levels of water quality constituents or characteristics which are established to provide reasonable protection of beneficial uses of water as one concept, and two, to prevent nuisance within a specific area. Nuisance is defined in Puerto Colón. It has three criteria, all three of which need to be met for the nuisance condition to be described. It is injurious to health, affects at the same time an entire community, and occurs as a result of treatment or disposal of waste. The water quality objectives, as they're described in Chapter 3, are either numeric in form or narrative. If they're numeric, they're generally a concentration limit or range. And if they're narrative, they generally, there's a sort of kind of standard language. It generally describes a requirement or prohibits a condition harmful to beneficial uses or causes nuisance. This is a list of the water quality objectives that are contained in Chapter 3. There's a number of them specific for water for surface water, and then another list for groundwater. There are a number of these constituents are ones that for which there are site-specific objectives, so objectives that are designed specifically for a given location. For example, we now have a site-specific objective for dissolved oxygen, which this board adopted a few years ago. We also have Table 3-1 and 3-1A, which include those site-specific objectives for surface water. And then again, there's also the anti-degradation policy, which is essentially a general objective, which is, says in a nutshell that whenever the existing quality of water is better than the quality established in policies, that such existing high quality shall be maintained. So as I say, chapter 3 describes the water quality objectives that are designed to protect our beneficial uses. Chapter 4 describes the plans and policies by which we accomplish that. It includes waste discharge prohibitions, schedules of compliance, action plans, policies, and guidelines. These are the key waste discharge prohibitions that are contained in Chapter 4 of the Basin Plan. There's the point source discharge prohibition, which includes a seasonal prohibition for some of the water bodies. There's a sediment discharge prohibition, and then there's a prohibition in the Klamath River that was adopted along with the TMDL and dissolved oxygen objective. There are a number of action plans in the Basin Plan. There are some for Humboldt Bay, Santa Rosa, and the Trinity River. These were designed many years ago, and some of them are probably ripe for upgrading. There's action plans for underground petroleum tanks, low threat discharges, mining accidental spills, logging construction. And the bulk of the action plans in the Basin Plan are actually the TMDL action plans. So those describe in some amount of detail the actions that we'll take to implement the TMDLs that have been adopted. There's also a series of policies. I will mention just a few of these. The on-site systems policy is one that this board adopted a number of years ago. The state board has adopted a statewide policy, which we are obligated to incorporate into the Basin Plan, and we'll be coming to you next month with a proposal to adopt the statewide policy with some special provisions for the Russian River as allowed in the statewide policy. And then I just point out that the temperature policy is the newest of the policies that we've added to the basin plan. You adopted that in March. Chapter 5 includes the state board plans and policies, and this chapter hasn't been updated in a number of years, so it doesn't include the full list. We've actually contemplated over time, and our basin planning roundtable supports the idea of essentially removing this chapter and instead just including a link to the state board website as the place to go for the most updated list of active state policies. So that's a idea that we'd appreciate your thoughts on. Chapter 6 describes monitoring, and again, this is a chapter that includes a number of programs that are no longer funded nor active, and so our thoughts on it are to essentially do an editorial revision that will describe our intentions, our goals when we do monitoring, and the different styles of monitoring that we do for those purposes. So ambient water quality monitoring, trend monitoring, effectiveness monitoring, and compliance monitoring. The specific programs and the funding associated with those change over time. So we're thinking about doing a more general description. I'll say about the triennial review process itself that our intention, and this is with the advice and guidance of Samantha, which we've really appreciated, is to bring to you in November a proposed list of priority projects, but associated with it all of the editorial revisions that have, some of which have been laying dormant and others of which still need to be done, but package them all together and bring them at the same time in November. So the triennial review process is a process, as the name would imply, we do about every 3 years. It's required both under Porter-Cologne and the Federal Clean Water Act. And the general idea is to solicit written and oral public input on the state of the basin plan, review the basin plan in comparison to new regulation and guidance and science, and develop a list of priority projects for which the basin plan should be amended to accommodate, and prioritize those projects. We identify the top priorities based on our staffing constraints, and once you adopt that list, that becomes the work plan for our basin planning unit for the following 3 years. So I'll just remind you of the projects that made it to what we call the short list in 2011 during that triennial review process. It included a number of TMDL projects, the Elk River, Freshwater Creek, Eel River, Matol, Navarro, Russian, and Laguna all were on that list is item number one of the 2011 triennial review. Of those projects, you now have adopted action plans for the Eel, Matol, and Navarro as part of the temperature implementation policy. The TMDL unit is actively working on the Russian River and the Laguna de Santa Rosa. We have, as you heard yesterday, staff in the Basin Planning Unit working on the Elk River. Freshwater Creek is kind of the outlier. We don't have staff currently working on it. But the intention has always been that when we finish the Elk River, that we'd apply much of the same science and logic to the freshwater, and we have plenty of data collected there and ready to analyze. Oh, I'm sorry, could you go back there? Thank you. The second item on the 2011 triennial review list was the temperature implementation policy, so we've now completed that task with your adoption of the policy last March. The third is the water quality objectives project for groundwater and surface water, and including a new and revised program of implementation. We've divided that project into two phases. We have attempted to bring the first phase to you a couple of times now, received a number of important public comments. We have now gone through our final version, what we hope is the final version of it, really updating and improving our CEQA analysis, which was one of the critical comments we received, and we hope to bring that before you in November for your consideration. If we're able to pass that amendment, then we'd turn our staff attention to the implementation portion, which is essentially developing a groundwater protection strategy. The fourth item on the triennial 2011 triennial review list was updating the dissolved oxygen objectives. We developed a concept for how to update dissolved oxygen, which we applied as a site-specific objective in the Klamath. Our plan right now is to fold in that concept into the water quality objectives update amendment, which you'll be seeing in November. So it's a fairly substantial update to Chapter 3. It includes revisions, editorial revisions, as well as revisions to specific objectives, and dissolved oxygen will be one of those objectives. And then the last item on the short list from 2011 was the Aquatic Ecosystem Restoration Policy. It is a project that has, like Freshwater Creek, laid dormant for some time, but we now have staff, Jonathan Warmerdam, who will be working on that project and with some hopes of bringing a resolution to you this year and an amendment next year describing an exemption for restoration projects that might otherwise be affected by our discharge prohibitions. So for this year's triennial review process, we have held an all-staff meeting to get staff input on the question of what amendments we should be looking into. This will be our third opportunity to hear oral comments from the public. We have a written comment deadline of June 20th. And then at that point, we will be collecting up all of those recommendations, doing an analysis of them, especially in consideration of new regulations and guidance and science, and conferring with other resource agencies, and then developing a list of priorities. Our intention is to develop a staff report and that list of priorities, recommended short list, bring it to you, release it for public review and comment, and bring it to you in November for your consideration. Depending on how the analysis goes and the degree to which it appears that there might be any controversy associated with the recommendations and how they rank in priority, we may come to you earlier than November for a workshop so that we have an opportunity to hear more public comment on the ranking itself. So I just wanted to share some of the recommendations that we've received to date, either in our all-staff meeting or in the previous two public scoping meetings, and we'll hear some more today. Some of the recommendations are to develop an exemption from the seasonal point source discharge prohibition, to develop a mixing zone policy for human health-based water quality objectives, to develop a flow objective, to reassess our discharge control programs in streams and rivers that might affect the new Gulf of the Farallon Sanctuary, to provide some clarifications to the hatchery policy, to provide some clarifications to our monitoring, and particularly our monitoring of tissue, sediment, and recycled water. An assessment of shallow groundwater and its use and protection. That recommendation is already, I think, going to be incorporated in our groundwater protection strategy, which will be phase two of the project that's already on the 2011 triennial review list. And then the last one is a natural sources exclusion policy. I'm sure you can't see this on your handout, but on the screen, this is the list of projects from the 2011 triennial review that did not make the shortlist. So I read and described the status of the shortlist projects. These are the ones that did not meet the shortlist, but you can see that the stream and wetlands policy is the top of that list, and right below it is an in-stream flow or watershed hydrology objective. Both of these issues have come up today, and I imagine we'll hear some more public comment on them. I wanted to point out that we already have done a significant amount of staff work on a stream and restoration, a stream and wetlands policy, and we also have drafted a narrative watershed hydrology objective. So that work has already begun under a previous triennial review. These are projects that in the last triennial review just didn't. We weren't able to maintain staffing for, and so did not make it to the short list. Similarly, we've done work on a mixing zone policy, and we've done some work on the hatchery policy. So there are a number of these issues here that we've already begun to do work on. And that concludes my presentation. I wanted to make the point that we are going to be receiving written comments until June 20th. I needed to establish that deadline so we'd have an opportunity to review all the recommendations and provide an analysis to and prioritization of the projects. Anybody who'd be interested in following this activity or this effort should consider signing up on our LIRIS list, which you can get to through our website. And those of you who sign up then will just receive an email anytime we post something related to the triennial review or any of our basin planning activities. And then my contact information is there as well. I would be happy to receive recommendations either in writing or either by post, by phone, or email. And so with that, I conclude my remarks.
Any board questions or comments? Okay. Go straight to the staff comments. Okay, boom. Mike Losey, City of Fortuna. And there's three City of Fortuna cards. So there's also Reagan Condolero and David Carter and Doug Colbert. Yes, but be on cue, so. And you're Doug Colbert?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you for being patient.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for allowing us to sit here. I've been told that I had a little bit more than 3 minutes, so I'm going to get scared if this starts to count down faster than I'm ready for it to do. But anyway, thank you for allowing me to speak before you today. I appreciate that. I was the only one left as everybody had to kind of go back to their commitments they have. So I pulled this out earlier today and got myself ready just in case I had to do this. And guess what? I'm here. But I'm ready. It's not the first time I've done this, so it's... I'm sorry, my name is Doug Colbert, and I'm the Chief Waste Plant Operator for the City of Fortuna. The reason we're here before you today is that we want to suggest or plead, whatever we have to do, to talk to you about getting a basin plan amendment to allow for year-round discharge. As our first, we can go to the next slide there. And the reason why is that we're pursuing this is the city's pursuing two paths right now. We're going parallel paths, and both paths have to do with advanced wastewater treatment, improvements for year-round addition to high-quality effluent into the Ill River. And that's the one path that we're taking. The other path is the same treatment level, but to pipe our effluent in the summertime somewhere. We don't know where. We're in the process of looking for that, but that would be our alternative if we're not able to discharge into the Ill River during that time, or eventually to the Ill River. And so we're looking that path one appears to be our greatest benefit to the people and the waters of the state. The City of Fortuna, we're requesting that the board amend the North Coast Basin Plan and to include an exception process much the same way as they have for the dilution ratio, and just looking at that to change from a 100-to-1 to whatever they have, just having that option to at least show why that should happen. And we're hoping that our path one would be evaluated. And the thing is that the City of Fortuna, this is not something new that we just thought of just yesterday. We've been pursuing this basin plan amendment for years. We sent a letter on January 24th, 2012, requesting that this be on the 2014 triennial review process. We met with city staff met with regional board staff shortly after that, and then in 2013, we were before you just to use a little time to tell you our intentions. And we've also presented to the Ill River, the Ill and the Russian River Commission. So we're serious about this issue, and we want to kind of move forward on that. And we can go to the next slide. why are we doing this? Our main thing is that the discharge prohibition, we don't feel that it's science-based, but rather it's reflective of processes and a stance from an era when the state-of-the-art treatment was oxidation ditches, and we can understand why it was implemented in the first place, to where treatment technology wasn't what it is today, and it was a way of protecting our waterways. We completely understand that. But now treatment technologies have advanced to the point where augmenting year-round flows with advanced treatment water will enhance beneficial uses. There are regulatory precedents for comparable science-based exceptions in other processes that have been looked at in the basin plan. I was looking through that a lot and some of the things that made it on the list. And the main reasons for looking at them is because technology has changed, and we have the ability to have better treatment to put into our receiving waters. And the city of Fortuna is facing a major capital expenditure in doing that, if this doesn't go through, something like this doesn't happen, to send pipeline or to acquire land elsewhere so where we're able to discharge during the summer onto these lands. And so this discharge into the Ill River with enhanced secondary treatment seems to be our best course of action, and we feel it's the greatest benefit to the people and the waters of the state, and that's the reason why we're pursuing this. We can go to the next slide. Go ahead and click the, we kind of have a timeline that we put together, and these are all kind of hypothetical. The Trano Review shortlist, we're in that period right now. And that's happening right now. Looking at the basin plan amended, if this were to happen, like I said, these are hypothetical, sometime in 2017, adopted, and then the city's our discharge prohibition exception application, which we would be working on during this process, would hopefully be accepted during that time. And next one there. What we're doing now, we've completed our preliminary engineering report, and we're working on the next phase of design, and the CalCEQA work is starting. And this is all kind of running concurrently. As I mentioned, we have the two paths that we're having to run, and there's going to come a time when we're going to have to go one direction or the other. And so we're going down both those paths right now. Our report of waste discharge is due in July of 2015. We're looking at having a dual permit issued that, you know, because of the timeline taking us to a certain point, and rather than starting another permit process, just have a dual permit. And then we have an assumed compliance deadline. If we were to not, if this exception not go through, we would have a compliance project that we would have to meet during that time to be able to build the infrastructure to go somewhere other than the river. And that's looking at somewhere in the first part of 2018. And I think there's a couple other bullets that'll pop up there. Is that all of them? So yeah, so if you look there, you see that it's a very tight process, very tight, and you know, concurrently we're running, and we're planning to do what we need to do, regardless of which direction we head on the basin plan. So we have a plan either way. We just like it to be the least expensive plan, and we feel like the best bang for our buck would be being able to go into the river year-round and be a better beneficial. The key points that we have here, the city's facing significant near-term compliance project expenditures. And the preliminary analysis that we've already done, we've got a good team that we're working with, that shows that year-round addition of advanced treatment effluent will likely have the lowest impact on the city's ratepayers while offering the potential to enhance the beneficial uses of the Ill River. And so we're fiscally minded. You know, somebody in my position, we want to make sure that people are you know, we're doing the best for our ratepayers. And the city's facing a choice to either invest a large sum of public money in enhanced secondary treatment improvements and new land discharge system, or invest that same money but less in the same type of process, advanced wastewater treatment, and then spend our resources on the scientific studies to be able to show scientifically that the water that we're putting in, the effluent that we're putting in during that summertime will be beneficial to the Ill River year-round. And based on that analysis completed to date, year-round addition of advanced treatment water appears to offer that maximum benefit to the people and the waters of the state. And finally, to end with the slides there, the discharge prohibition exception process, it must be considered, as far as we're concerned, under the 2014 triennial review, or the potential for adding advanced treatment water to the Ill River year-round. It won't be feasible for the city of Fortuna. We can't wait for the next triennial review. We're just going to have to move forward on that other path. And one thing I'll mention from a personal level is I was involved, as some of you were there, in the getting the one-to-one ratio for Ferndale. And when we started that process, we were told that's going to be an uphill battle. It's unprecedented. It's very improbable. Good luck. And here we are. We did it. And we kind of had the same language come toward us and feel the same way with the space and plan amendment. You know, it's unprecedented. It's very improbable. Good luck. And here we are. Here we are before you, and I've seen it happen before, and I know it can happen as long as we kind of put our heads together and look at the science of it and not just personal issues or whatever, but look at the science. And we have the same team, basically, that we're working with that helped us out in Ferndale. So, and the very last thing I'll leave you with is as Alita was going through the purpose of the triennial review is to keep pace with regs, new technology, policy, and physical characteristics of effluent. And this is one of those things where the technology has changed, and it is something that we all need to look at and take into consideration when we look at this prohibition. And so that's all I would have to say, and I'll take any questions if you have that.
Board member comments or questions?
Okay. I have one, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Doug, for a very thorough and thoughtful presentation. Maybe just a heads up on key point number two. While offering the potential to enhance the beneficial uses of the Eel River, if you were to come before this board again with your scientific analysis, I would hold your feet to the fire on that word. I'd want to know what you mean by enhancement and how you would actually improve beneficial, because you're implying there that you will improve beneficial uses. I applaud you for taking such a bold step, but I would expect to circle back to that and have a discussion on that.
And we'll be ready for you.
That's all I'm asking for, buddy. Thank you.
All right, so is Mike Luzzi from City of Fortuna?
My name is Mike Losey, and I'm the mayor pro tem for the city of Fortuna. I'll be real quick this afternoon. I've been, especially considering the late afternoon here, I've been on many boards and commissions, and I know you're probably just thinking, let's just get this day over with, this meeting over with, and let's go home. So I will be fast. Honorable chairman, board members, and staff, on behalf of the city council and the citizens of Fortuna, we would respectfully request that you would agree to the provisions in the basic plan for the city of Fortuna to provide to you members and staff evidence regarding our discharge into the receiving waters. As it stands, we are unable to even address that issue, but we would greatly appreciate the chance to provide evidence as to the beneficial use of the receiving waters. These last several years of this ongoing drought is especially significant, considering the possibility of additional resources to our water supply. I'd like to thank the board for being here, having this meeting here in Fortuna, and this opportunity to address you.
All right. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you. I told you I was going to be real fast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other representatives of Fortuna here? Okay. We understand they had other obligations.
Tim Erickson, Director of Public Works, City of Ukiah.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Erickson. I'm the Director of Public Works for the City of Ukiah. And I want to thank Alita for including already one of our projects. It was in 2011, it was the project number eight, which was not on the short list, and that's the inclusion of the mixing zone study for the human health constituents. This is an issue for the city because at this time, we have just in 2009 put in a $57 million expansion of our wastewater treatment plant. If we can't have this mixing zone study considered and adopted, we're looking at another $22 million worth of capital improvements. That would take the rates for a mobile home, single individual living into it, over $100 a month. It's not something that can really be tolerated. Mixing zone studies are approved for other constituents, not for the human health constituents, and we're hoping that you can consider this. We have a letter already in that we sent April 16th with all the technical reasons. April 8th, we went to the Santa Rosa meeting and also pled our case for this. The Russian River Watershed Association has also sent in a letter on behalf of several agencies, of which 26 are identified as being able to be benefit from this situation. The other thing that the board should consider, and Lita spoke to this a little bit, is all the heavy lifting for this item have been done from 2006 to 2011. A lot of the technical work has been done for this item. And so the city is willing to provide board staff whatever it is, you know, anything short of $22 million we're ready to be available for. That's what my elected officials told me to say. So we feel that the technical studies are there. Anything that needs to be bolstered, if that is what takes to get it on the list, we're willing to do that. And so we are hoping that we can make sure that this is on the short list this time. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. Any questions or comments from board members?
The only thing, Mr. Chair, you're aware that City of Santa Rosa, Tim, did a outfall from Delta Pond.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's part of the study that
okay.
we're relying
that's
on.
That's what I thought you were alluding to.
We have that same individual under contract right now to help us, that same okay. process, yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Cynthia Elkins, Center for Biological Diversity, and welcome back. We haven't seen you for a while, so.
Cynthia Elkins with the Center for Biological Diversity. As you noted, it's been a long time since I've been in front of this board, but it's nice to see a couple of familiar faces, and good to see you, Mr. Corbett and Mr. Massey, again. I'm here actually to talk about something that I discussed way back in those good old days, and that is the implementation of the state and federal anti-degradation policy and the protection of high-quality and outstanding national resource waters. The anti-degradation policy, or anti-deg policy, actually predates the Clean Water Act, and it forms the intent and goals of the act, and it's also a fundamental component set out to achieve the goals of the act. Just very briefly, the anti-deg policy has three tiers. The first is the absolute floor, and it requires that all existing beneficial uses, which is defined as all existing uses since 1975, must be maintained and protected. The second level provides a higher level of protection for water quality that exceeds that necessary to support the propagation of fish, shellfish, wildlife, and recreation in and on the water, and that's regardless of the use designation. Importantly, the EPA has specified that not all the parameters need to be better than the state's ambient criteria in order for the water body to qualify as a high-quality water body. And in high-quality waters, there cannot be any degradation unless there is a full anti-degradation review that involves public participation and finds that lowering of water quality is absolutely necessary to accommodate important economic or social development. And also, in allowing such degradation or lowering of water quality, the state must assure that there shall be achieved the highest statutory and regulatory requirements for all new and existing point sources and all cost-effective and reasonable best management practices for non-point source control. The highest level of protection is afforded to Tier 3 water bodies, and these are ones that these are high-quality waters that constitute an outstanding national resource, such as waters of national and state parks and wildlife refuges, and waters of exceptional recreation or ecological significance. Known as outstanding natural resource waters, or excuse me, national resource waters, or ONRWs, the anti-degradation policy provides that their water quality shall be maintained and protected. California's policy was adopted in 1968, and it's a bit nuanced, as one court put it, in that it addresses only high-quality waters, but it incorporates federal policy's three tiers of protection that I just mentioned. So, as you know, we have some of the most absolutely magnificent water bodies and ecologically significant water bodies in the state of California here in this region. It's quite likely that some of those water bodies qualify as high quality waters or outstanding national resource waters. However, to our knowledge, the best of our knowledge, this regional board has never once done an anti-degradation review to allow discharges into high quality waters. Likewise, there's not a single ONRW designated in the entire region. In fact, there are only two in the entire state, that's Mono Lake and Lake Tahoe. The public has tried to engage on this issue several times in the last 15 years. The state board has said that ONRW designations would be addressed during triennial reviews. The regional board has identified ONRW designations as a priority in three of your last four triennial reviews, but unfortunately, the item did not make it to the top of the list, and it was left out of your work plan. So just briefly, and I know I'm over time, but just let me briefly summarize. Why does this matter? Well, let's just take the Smith River as just one example. Now, this is the only major free-flowing river in California. It's known as the crown jewel of the state's wild and scenic rivers, and it's renowned for its large-sized salmon. In fact, the biggest steelhead ever caught in California was caught in the Smith River, and the second largest Chinook ever caught in the state was from the Smith River. So let's say that the regional board would have looked at the water bodies and sometime in the last 46 years since this policy has been adopted, decided that the Smith River qualifies as an ONRW. Well, that would give you a much, much different standard to review projects that have the potential to discharge into the Smith River. For example, the Highway 199 widening project. So when you were evaluating that project, if it had been designated as an ONRW, you would have looked at that project much differently than you did. So in short, we believe that the board is long overdue in taking action to protect high quality and outstanding national resource waters. We believe these watersheds are not receiving the level of protection they deserve and are required by law to receive. Specifically, we're urging the board to gather baseline data and information to determine if and where high quality waters exist and to initiate a public process to evaluate ONRW designations. This is a fundamental yet overlooked component of the Clean Water Act, and we urge the regional board to put this issue on your short list of priorities and ensure that it is addressed in your next 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. And does legal counsel want to comment? I know you've done some work on this. It came up in one of our permits where we specifically provided for such a designation because we wanted the state board to adopt and be able to adopt it for Lake Tahoe.
It's been a while.
Okay. Thank you. We'll give thought to your comments.
Thank you for considering.
Susan Corm. And then my microphone is moving as though for unknown reasons.
So. It's not my fault. Okay, again, Susan Corm with the Crib Drive. Stop it.
Today I'd like to talk to you guys about the stream and wetland riparian policy. I was here when you guys were first working on it. Actually, it was listed as a high priority item in your 2004 triennial review, and the last draft is from 2009. It's a really great document. I was up to like 11 o'clock just trying to get through the introduction to refresh my memory about what it was about. I'm really impressed with the work that was done by your staff. I think they did a great job, and I'm really disappointed to see that it's been dropped and it hasn't been adopted or pushed forward in the last few years since I've been out. I heard there were some issues. I heard Region 2 took it over, and then there were some issues with like potential implementation, and they kind of hit a roadblock. But what I'm really hoping to do is that you guys can pick up the stream and wetland riparian policy, even if it's not in the exact same form, but in some iteration. What it provided for is it was proposing to have a watershed hydrology water quality objective. And that would make the linkage between the pattern and range of flows and the protection of beneficial uses. I think from everything I've heard today coming out of you guys, this is like one of your highest priority items. This is something that we really need to be working on right now. It also is totally tied in with your TMDLs. In the 2005 Scott TMDL implementation, it pointed to this, saying that temperature impacts will be addressed in the forthcoming stream and wetland riparian policy. In your 2006 Shasta TMDL, it also pointed to this, saying, it's in our 2004 triennial review, it's a high priority item, we're gonna have this for our TMDLs. So I'm kind of wondering where we're at with Shasta and Scott TMDL implementation, if you guys were relying on this policy, or relying on this potential tool, and now it's nowhere. I mean, it's just been buried back in the file cabinet for a little bit longer. Also, you know, I mean, of course it's important for flows, but specifically for like the Shasta, the importance of shade, including riparian suppression and removal, is a huge issue. Now, when I talked to Alita, she said this, some of this had been addressed through the temperature policy that you guys just adopted recently. I read through it quickly. Again, I've only been back 2 weeks, so I'm trying to catch up. I don't quite see how it was as clear and awesome as this policy seems to be. So also what the state board had asked in 2006 when one of the TMDLs was adopted, the State Water Board asked that when you guys work on this, you also develop it in consideration of Native American cultural beneficial uses. So again, Crystal and I are here. We'd like to be a part of this. We really want to make sure that you can consider cultural beneficial uses. So what I'm seeing you guys need to have happen, which I hear is what everybody is wanting, is that we need to tie together. We either need a watershed hydrology or a flow objective, whichever one you're calling it. I don't know if those are one and the same, but I think that should be a high priority item, and it needs to tie together groundwater, riparian temperature. This all needs to be integrated. It seems like what was pointed out in the stream wetland riparian policy is that we had some gaps, and that policy was supposed to kind of bring it all together and make it all make sense for what we're doing in trying to restore these watersheds. So I would really like this to be a high priority item. Whether you have to break it out from the flow portion, I think they're both very important, and I'd like them at the top of the list for the 2014 triennial review.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Jennifer Kalt.
Hello again, thank you. Jennifer Kalt with Humboldt Baykeeper. I would like to support Cynthia Elkins' remarks about the ONRWs. You know, it's pretty clear that we're in a really discouraging state of affairs where we basically have all this degradation and then we try and protect things after they're degraded. And having a much stronger implementation of the anti-degradation policy would be very helpful in a lot of ways. And, you know, something I ran out of time to talk about earlier is the importance of Humboldt Bay for the oyster industry in times of ocean acidification. There have been oyster seed operations moved to Humboldt Bay from Puget Sound because the pH of the waters there are too low for them to have reliable seed set. And as the oyster industry is working on trying to expand, they're very limited by the amount of seed that they have. And you know, they rely on clean water. Humboldt Bay's water is clean enough to have, you know, oysters eaten raw out of Humboldt Bay. So that's, you know, that's pretty outstanding, I would say, for especially such a populated watershed. What I came to talk about is updating the action plan for the Humboldt Bay area. I'm not sure when it was written, but reading it over, it I would guess sometime in the 90s. And I think, it does talk about bacteria concerns and agriculture and some other things, but it's extremely out of date and can use updating. And as Mr. Corbett mentioned earlier, the dioxin TMDL, I believe, is scheduled for 2019. And since the dioxin working group has faded due to stonewalling by some of the stakeholders, which are not present anymore, I don't think, now would be a good time to get that process geared up again. One thing I also wanted to just bring to your attention, in the Humboldt Bay Action Plan, one of the implementation measures is review and assessment of land use activities. And the Humboldt County General Plan update, which is in year 14, is actually near its last rounds, and the water resources element will be coming up later this year. So all that's left are the open space element and the water resources element, which the water resources element is really critical for many reasons, but it has a lot of good components in it that there are going to be a lot of interests working to weaken. And realistically, the Humboldt County General Plan update is so important just to get this county up to speed with state law, current state law. And having regional board staff, they have commented in the past, but having them have more attention as the water resources element is being decided will really basically give some backbone to the decision makers, who are going to get a lot of pressure from people who want to weaken the water resources element. In particular, there's a provision for limiting development based on the carrying capacity of the watershed for people and aquatic species. And that one is going to be the top target, I'm sure. So I hope that your staff will have the resources they need to really look at that and be involved as it's getting through its last hurdle here. Thank you.
Thank you. And Scott Grayson.
Again, Scott Grayson, Executive Director, Friends of the Eel River. Three hosannas and a caution. I want to strongly support the call for an anti-degradation review and the designation of outstanding national resource waters. It's long overdue and clearly very important to move forward. I also want to echo Ms. Corum's call for moving the stream and wetland policy well up on the stack. And Ms. Kalt's call for the engagement of board staff with the Humboldt County General Plan update is indeed critical. My caution is the City of Fortuna's proposed Basin Plan Amendment. I do not oppose that idea in concept. I think it merits a robust discussion, and I look forward to that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I believe that's all the public cards I have, so I'll take it to the board for discussion. Well, I had one that seems to me quite a few of the speakers are saying we haven't gone back and updated our original basin plan, and that was a program all the regional boards went asleep, and all the regional boards got revived by TMDL. But I see people are saying, gee, what about these general provisions? You've never gone back to look at them. I don't know whether we can put that in the triennial review, but I do think at some point it would be good for us to read the original documents and update them, because they are getting older and older and older. So I think that's a excellent critique of our regional board, although we are not doing worse than other regional boards on that, and how to get it into a funding stream and a planning stream and where that goes, I don't know, but I did think it's a thoughtful comment that we're really referring to a 70s write-up of, you know, oysters and some of the stuff in Humboldt Bay. I would like us to take a look for the Smith River, whether an upgraded designation makes sense. It's a very unique river. It is the only scenic and wild river, and what the implications of that are. I do remember it was raised by Cynthia Elkins a long time ago. I do remember us looking into it, and I remember it as stalled out. But I think it might be good to run it through and see what you think for the Smith. And you may think it's no or not. I'm not trying to give a direction, but I do think it's worth looking at. And then I think we need some way, at least from my perspective, to review the city proposals in a lot more depth. So not to drop them, not to dismiss them, but to get a lot deeper analysis so that we can make an intelligent decision. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I do support the also the call for the stream of wetland policy. I was on the beginning of that as when Steve Moore was a board member at Region 2, and I know it went to Region 2, and I have never seen it come back. And I'd like to know, I'd like to know where that is and how do we, it seems to jive so well with so many things we're doing. The temperature policy does actually have many pieces of what I would believe would be a policy in it. It doesn't seem to me that it's a heavy lift. I know it has very big implications, but when we have general plans and other types of planning documents that are being developed on local or regional levels, it strikes me that a policy that has the collaboration of the state board, Region 2 and Region 1, should be able to wrap our arms around that. And I'd like to see if we can take a look. At a minimum, I'd like to know where it's at, what happened to that. Last I saw was the designation and determination of what is a wetland, and that's the last I saw of it.
Would you like some feedback on that now?
Yeah.
Sure.
So this is Alita Mangelstorf with your staff. There are two efforts underway, the stream and wetland, or stream and riparian protection policy, which was the policy that Region 1 and Region 2 were working on together. When we lost the staff who was working in the Region 1 office, he returned to law school. The Region 2 staff continued working on that project on behalf of both regions and took it nearly to the end, meaning that it had a very robust staff report, a proposed basin plan amendment language, and an implementation plan. And where it hit a wall was in discussions between the Region 2 staff and the State Board on the question of whether or not the amendment language was something that was implementable in all water bodies in Region 2. And the implementation plan, if you think about the protections were meant to, are designed to protect riparian vegetation with particular kinds of processes protected. And in a region like Region 2, they couldn't come up with an implementation plan that would ensure that all of the state's waters could meet the criteria. So they have dropped the proposal and have turned it over to us, essentially. We have it now, I have it on my hard drive, and I'm getting ready to post the peer review package on our website. Because that information is, should be publicly available. And were it to come up as a priority for our shortlist, we would turn to the project again and look at this specific question of how to implement the criteria that have been developed in all of the water bodies in our region.
Would that, if you took that on as staff, and you and your staff took that on to finish, would you finish it to be specific to Region 1, or would your goal be to make it on up the way to Region 2 and State Board?
No, it would be specific to Region 1.
Okay.
So the second process that's going on is the wetland policy undertaken at the State Board level, wherein they've now worked out a definition, a state definition of wetlands, and are developing in an iterative fashion of a number of phases are developing protections both for wetlands and then in the future for riparian areas as well. And so we had always been in sort of a parallel process, and that was also one of the considerations is whether at some point we were going to be in conflict with one another.
Board Member Gustin, did you have a comment?
I just had a comment and a question for Alita. I wanted to echo and support the chair's call to revisit the idea of elevating the Smith River to a higher designation. I'd be very interested in what you'd find out about that. The question I had, I was thinking about this from your slides, Alita, on the action plan and policies. Both of them called for a addressing herbicide use or herbicide waste from silvicultural applications. I guess my question is, why are we limited only to forestry? Why not just herbicides and water and more generally? Recognizing that this is held over from a different time.
Yeah, it's an older policy. It was adopted specifically for silviculture in a time when there were a number of efforts underway to try to develop a more clearer program for water quality protection in the arena of silviculture. It very well could be one of those policies that's right for updating to apply more generally.
Yeah, I'll leave it there for now, but okay.
Yeah, good, thank you. And then I wanted to, what Alita described is exactly my understanding of the state process, but when I was on the statewide chairs meeting and setting the next agenda for the WQCC, whoever came up with those initials should be shot, but they are putting, it became apparent that whether there's a statewide policy or not, quite a few of the regional boards, and I mentioned it earlier, and then it was also mentioned by the state board representative. Two or three of the regional boards are looking very actively in roles on wetlands restoration. And then I don't know quite how they knew about it, but were aware we're hunting around for restoration policy, and they're looking at that to plug into it. I'm not sure that's where we're going with it, but I do think it bears updating that something is happening out there, two or three regions, and that's a sign either the states let go and that would free us up to do it, or that it's an option and I think we ought to explore what can we reasonably do with it that'd be good for water quality in the mix of all our priorities.
One clarification I'd like to make, if I may, is that in the work that Region 1 and 2 were doing together, one of the proposals within the proposed basin plan amendment was to adopt the beneficial uses specific to wetlands and their protection, which are uses that we already have in our basin plan, but Region 2 does not. So some of the other regions who are interested in this work are also still would need to adopt those beneficial uses, that we have those uses in our plan, and that is not perfectly unique. There are other regions as well, but not all of the regions have the wetland or the water quality enhancement or the flood peak attenuation objectives.
Alita, was that the one that included like flood attenuation and that type of stuff? There was several of those that went along with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's a set of three.
Yeah.
It's wetland habitat, water quality enhancement, and flood peak attenuation.
Yeah.
And I'll try and track down the contacts off of the different regional board chairs, which ones to call. Because I was shocked at how far advanced they were and how much they were moving, because I like to always think we're on top of it. But in this case, I got the impression we weren't. And so I wanted to figure out what was going on. And I think it's well worth us taking a look at.
I'd be happy at any point to bring you. I, at one point, did do a comparison of each of the regions and the beneficial uses that we each have specific to wetlands and any objectives that we have. And there, I think it might be Region 4, who actually has a pretty good set of objectives described for protection of wetlands. So I have a chart at some point I can share with you if you're interested.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, well, we're looking at the basin plan and triennial review of it, and we're piling work on the staff. Let me add a little bit, particularly with an interest to the request by the City of Fortuna. The origins of and the ideas behind the summer prohibition that we have for the basin plan and for the region for discharge to waters. I would be interested in taking a look at that again.
To my knowledge, that discharge prohibition is in the original basin plan.
Right.
And we have somewhere in our library sort of several packages of notes from that staff and the contractors made during that time when the basin plan was being written and revised. So I can probably provide you with a little bit of history.
If you would, because in that case, it's 40-some years old.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting at. Two or three of the items coming before us are referring back to items written
right
40 years ago, and I think they got a point. Technology's changed. Things are different. We're a little bit more sophisticated. But we can look at that isolated, but I wanted staff to also look at the whole issue. Is there any way we take a look at all the 40-year-old language and systematically over the next couple of years take a review?
And to speak a little bit to Mr. Massey's request, I know we all received this brand new today, but from the City of Fortuna, they actually did prepare a nice cover letter and technical memo that provides some of the history of that original basin plan language, as well as some of the justification for why they believe that the change is beneficial. So as I had time to skim through this, I thought it was actually pretty informative. So it will answer some of your questions.
I also want to say, having been there, showing way too much age here, but they rushed through the plan. It wasn't, I mean, we spend more time on a single amendment than they did writing the entire plan. And it was new, as fresh, as exciting. They're under deadline, they did it. And of course, the Port of Colonax said you're supposed to update it. Well, everyone got through the excitement, they did it, and none of the regional boards that went asleep really told TMDL. But I don't think any of the items in there were researched up to today's standards. I mean, I'm not critical. They did a job. It moved things down the road tremendously. It's still around 40 years later, but I, you know, just have that observation. It was pretty old and stale and pretty quick at the time. I think the whole thing was written, I don't know, in a year and a half or something.
Well, thank you very much for your comments and recommendations. It's helpful.
Well, and thank you again. You've, on the triennial review, the quality of the presentations and the policy of the boards are just so improved. When I first came on here, there's a little 8.5 by 11 sheet list, and what do you want to change about it was, oh, okay, and they literally went through almost as a consent item.
We grunted.
So, we I know you're going to try that again, but you won't be so troubled by our comments, but I do want to say it really shows how much extra work staff does now, both for themselves and for us and for the public, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice. All right. So any staff comments or anything, or we're, otherwise we're moving on. Executive officer.